Thank you, Your Honor. John, the next case, number 25-1828, Matthew Thurston et al. Versus Progressive Casualty Insurance Company et al. At this time, would counsel for the appellants please introduce himself on the record to begin?
John Steed for the appellants. Thank you, Your Honor. Progressive underpaid each of the plaintiffs.
Reserve any time for rebuttal or
2 minutes, please. Sorry. Progressive underpaid each of the plaintiffs by taking a legitimate vehicle evaluation tool, a comparable methodology, and arriving at the correct value of the vehicles, and then adding a negative deduction that they don't explain or justify, except to say it models consumer negotiating behavior.
Okay, counsel, we understand the claim. The issue here, it's a summary judgment context, and the district judge at Torreson determined there's no issue, genuine issues of material fact, and you had several experts or expert opinion that she specifically excluded. So without that, there's no issue as to what you're claiming. So if you want to go into that, why was there an error perhaps excluding the experts, or are there any other genuine issues of material fact?
Sure. So the Judge Torreson excluded all of the defendant's experts and kept in our expert and struck one material fact from the statement of material facts, and that material fact was that dealt with what goes on inside the math, inside the PSA projection. But our expert said, and she didn't address this or strike it, that there are other issues with the projected sold adjustment, that it doesn't have a place in one of these comparable method valuations at all. And so I think you could say that his argument said, this comp methodology is a reliable yardstick to determine value, and Progressive cut off a piece of it and then used this modified yardstick to measure the value. And that was never stricken by the court, and it was never engaged in by the court. So the gist of our appeal, or the central thrust of our argument, is that there were other problems with this PSA tool that have nothing to do with whether they did the math right on modeling consumer behavior, because modeling consumer behavior has no place in valuing a car. It has nothing to do with...
What's his basis for that? I mean, I know you didn't get into a Daubert, and so you operated on an assumption, but there's also a rule that says that, you know, unsupported assertions and opinions and all of that can't be used to defeat summary judgment. So, you know, your guy says that you shouldn't do this, but I read it and I couldn't figure out exactly why your guy is saying that. Mr. Merritt is saying.
Sure. He says it's not an objective measure about the vehicle in question. It's an assumption about how the buyer will behave, or the lot, the insured will behave, and that has no place because an appraiser can't make an objective determination about that.
Your argument would be because he is a person with expertise and knowledge and experience in the world of valuing cars, in his view is that metrics that rely on estimated customer behavior inappropriate, that's what this is, that's enough to get to the jury.
Yes, I mean, because that's a real reason. He says it's not based on hard objective data that an appraiser can determine.
Counsel, can I follow up with you about that? Because I think, as I understood what the district court was ruling, is yes, your expert made that offer that opinion, but to conclude that the reduction was not based on any hard data, you'd have to understand what actually went into the reduction. And there was no evidence about what actually went into the reduction. And therefore, that opinion wasn't enough to create a genuine dispute of material fact. That's how I understood what she was saying. In other words, you say it's based on, or your expert, not you, expert says that it's based on predictions, not hard data. The other side says that's not correct. We look at what actually happens when people buy cars that are listed for sale. And, you know, it never happens that people offer more than the sale price. That would be very odd. So they're at most it's at or below that the cars sell. So then when we're giving people a replacement cost for the car, we're taking that into account. So how much money would you actually need to buy it? Why is she wrong that in order for your expert's opinion to create a dispute of material fact, we'd need to actually know how the calculation was done?
Because I think in addition to saying there may have been errors with how the calculation was done, he says that's not something that we consider when we do this. I'm an expert in the field. I've been doing this for 40 years, and that is not something I see that we look at.
What does that mean exactly? Because if you're I'm just trying to fully understand.
Sure.
That's all, your position, because you're trying to, the goal here is to figure out how much money to give someone so they can replace the car that they just lost. In other words, how much money do you need to have right now so you could buy a car that was in the condition your car was in before it was totaled? And the way we figure that out is a bunch of the comp methodology your expert agrees to, and then we take some sort of discount from what the listed price is, because as I just said, people don't pay more. They either pay what it is or a little bit less.
Sure. And he says that's not something that's standard industry practice. And he's been in the industry for a long time. He says it violates appraisal ethics. It says it doesn't, you know, talk about the vehicle in question, as I've already said, but also all Progressive says about what they do is that they don't say anything about it. They've offered no data on their methodology to validate it. So he's an expert in the field and says, I've never heard of this and it doesn't make sense to me because it's not about the vehicle in question. Progressive says, you haven't proven your case. And I think that's the error the court made, is it put the burden on these plaintiffs to fight with Progressive about their just number that they've thrown in, saying so, into an otherwise valid methodology.
So what you're arguing to us is that your expert said that no insurance, the industry is, no insurance company would reduce the amount that it's going to pay its insurer by some number that represents the discount that you would get from the listed sale price. Is that, that's the opinion he offered?
He's saying he's an appraiser, and a discount like that from a reduction in starting the base with the base of the list price isn't something that appraisers would do. And because it's not about the vehicle in question, it's about the consumer. And Genevieve McDonald, one of the plaintiffs, says specifically, I've never negotiated on the price of a car.
Let me ask you, that was that individual you're speaking about qualified under Daubert or no?
No, Genevieve McDonald is one of the plaintiffs. Sorry.
No, I mean the one before.
Our expert there, yeah. The court did not make any Daubert determination. So
I just assumed his testimony would be admissible and
yes,
went and on. In other words, she actually thought what she was doing was giving you the benefit of every
right, but then focused doubt on this, the minutia of the internal workings of a proprietary system, as opposed to the more broader picture of how, what's a fair and reasonable way to measure the value of a car. And we had an expert who said, this is not a fair and reasonable way to measure the value of a car because it makes assumptions about consumer behavior.
Let me just try asking this a slightly different way, because I'm not sure I understand your answer. The insurance company is saying this is exactly about how you figure out the actual value of the car, because we're trying to give you the amount of money you need to buy a car that was in exactly the same condition as it was before you totaled it. And to figure out exactly how much money you need, we're going to take into account that when somebody lists a car for $5,000, the data shows you can actually get it for $4,800. I'm just giving these numbers.
Yeah, but the data is not there at all.
But I guess what I'm trying to understand is, what exactly is your expert saying when they're saying that's not about the car, it's about the consumer? That's just the part that I'm struggling to understand.
Sure, because it makes an assumption that the consumer, like Genevieve McDonald, one of the plaintiffs, will go out and negotiate their price. It's not that the dealers are going to offer less than the list price. It's that consumers will successfully negotiate, which involves, like, what if women are better negotiators? And so can Progressive pay women less for cars because they'll do a better job negotiating? And so
they just say across a huge section of, you know, we can estimate that if you ask for $200 off, you'll get it. Yes, we don't know. You may be too shy to do that in the individual case, but people can do that. And so we're making an estimate, and this is the way we're doing it. And the evidence you have is just your guy says that's not how it's done.
The evidence we have is our guy says that's not a valid way to appraise the value of a vehicle.
And what makes that anything other than his opinion unsupported by anything is the experience that he has in the industry.
Well, it's the experience he has in the industry. It's also his opinion as a person in the industry that the proper measure is the objective facts about the vehicle.
All he has to support that, the way you do it is hard evidence, blah, 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 you know, his thing is because I've done this work.
I've done this work and I've used this valuation tool, and this isn't part of this valuation tool. So it's a debate between which is the, which, He's saying, this is a comp method valuation. This is how you do it. I've been in the industry for decades, and this is how you do it. And they're adding a new thing to it.
I mean, the language of a policy seemed kind of broad and sort of gave the insurance companies, they can use different methods. What makes his way, I mean, it's a way, but what about what he says makes the other ways in violation of that provision or the main law about fair settlements? I mean, what connects it up?
I think if they're going to say, I think they've offered no evidence that their way is better. He said, this is the standard. It's been used this way my whole career, and they've added a new thing. And the only thing we can tell about it is it makes consumers get paid less. And in his opinion, the correct way to arrive at the value on that, the piece of the information of value available in the valuation reports, is to remove this unjustified deduction.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Would counsel for the appellees please introduce themselves on the record? You have a 10-minute response.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. Amy Upshaw on behalf of the appellees, United Financial Casualty Company, and Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. I first just want to quickly clarify three issues that are not in dispute in this appeal. First, I don't understand plaintiffs to dispute that whether the PSA is a flawed adjustment is a material fact, so they bear the burden of proof to introduce evidence to support that fact. Second, I understand plaintiffs to concede that they've not introduced facts into the record about the methodology underlying PSAs, how they're estimated, or on what data they're based. And then third, if you look at page 7 of plaintiff's reply brief, they acknowledge that their expert cannot base factual assertions about how the PSA is calculated on out-of-court statements. So as I understand plaintiff's argument here, it's that their expert's opinion sort of necessarily gives them enough to satisfy summary judgment, even though that opinion is not based on any facts in the record, which is what the district court found.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't Judge Torreson basically say that expert opinion was all based on hearsay?
That's exactly right.
Or what happened in other cases, and again, that's not admissible. So even given the benefit of the doubt as an expert, we're not contesting the expertise, but where's the beef? There's nothing there to support the theory.
Judge Helfie, I think that's exactly right. The district court went and looked at the expert's opinion, noted that the expert's opinion, if you look at supplemental report at 6, says, based on my understanding of the Mitchell PSA methodology, it's not an appropriate basis for adjusting the list price. And then the court says, that expert's not an expert on Mitchell International's methodology, and so can't directly opine and offer, opinion on that fact. And then it's just basing those statements on what counsel told him or on statements from other.
Disputed that for every single, unless you have one of the exceptions, like it's a no-haggle dealer's offer, that they will take this $200, whatever, some deduction. And the point I take him to be making is, what Merritt says is, I've worked in this industry, I know about car valuations, that's what I do, and I've done this a long time, and what I know is, you don't just lop off a certain amount of money because you're making a prediction of consumer behavior and dealer response to that consumer behavior. And so they're just doing that to get a little deduction out of each and every totaled car. And that's my opinion, and it's based on what I've done. And how do we draw the line when that is okay because it's based on what he's done, and he's done it for a long time, versus that is an unsupported conclusion that cannot be credited for summary judgment?
Respectfully, I think if you look at the expert opinion, the expert doesn't say it's totally impermissible to do something other than list price. He notes that it's permissible in some circumstances to reduce the list price to account for an actual sale price. He also talks about this take price adjustment, which looks very similar to the projected sold adjustment, and says it is okay to sort of make a deduction from list price where you've called the dealer or you've undertaken
right,
sort of that type of data.
The distinction that he's trying to draw to say what's permissible is if there's actual evidence to justify this deduction, and what's impermissible is when you just use some kind of generalized deductor. And that's the point the guy is trying to make. And I guess my question is, how do we know whether to credit that or not?
Well, I think sort of first you need to figure out, is there any record evidence to support how the PSA is calculated here? On what data, what are they doing to justify the PSA? And if you look at, you know, page 12 of the district court's opinion, page 21 of the district court's opinion, the district court looked at the statement of material facts and just says, I have no way of figuring out.
Maybe they're doing the take thing and we just don't know it.
How the PSA is put together. I think that's, the district court says that it's just vacant on that. You know, I want to be clear, Progressive, we tried to get this evidence in the record. We submitted a declaration from a representative from Mitchell that explains the very hard data that this is based on. Plaintiffs made a strategic choice that they did not want that evidence in the record, that that was bad for their case. And so the district court, looking at the summary judgment record, said, I'm going to make all of those assumptions in your favor and then look at the statement of material of undisputed facts on that basis. And so that I think is the process the district court did and correctly concluded that there's just no evidence here on the PSA methodology to
be
able to determine.
Summarize Merritt's opinion. What is it?
As I understand Merritt's opinion, it is that based on his understanding of the methodology here, where the way that they're getting at this data is, I think he says it's not based on hard data, that it's, arbitrarily not considering certain numbers, that sort of adjustment is a flawed adjustment, and therefore it shouldn't be applied.
You don't know that, Merritt, that that's how we do it?
And that's exactly right, that you need to have facts in the record that support those assumptions. And, I think that the
counsel, can I try it this way? It seems that actually the dispute here is what the expert opinion was, because opposing counsel told us that the expert opinion was really, you just don't do this at all, because it's based on consumer preferences or particular consumers. It's not based on the car, and the correct methodology is always looking at the particular car, not general consumer behavior. And what you're saying is that's actually not what Merritt opined. He opined that you could do some sort of deduction if it's based on hard data, but his view was that your PSA is not based on hard data. So your response is, well, you can't have that view if you don't know how we do the PSA. So isn't that actually really the dispute here, is just what the opinion that was offered consisted of, and whether the district court was then correct to say, given that there was no evidence, that you systematically disregarded offers at or above the listed price, et cetera, et cetera. There's no data about how this is done at all. The opinion that's been offered is not enough.
I do want to take a step back. I think to some degree that's right. I do think what the district court was doing here was applying its local rule, one of these anti-fair rules, which requires the parties to come to the court with their assertions of facts and then to include in it the citations of record that support those facts. And so that was the analysis that the district court was doing. This court has repeatedly said that's an appropriate way to view this, that, repeatedly emphasized the importance of complying with that local rule. And so I think the district court did sort of appropriately look at that statement of undisputed facts, go back and see whether they were supported by the record or not. And the district court correctly concluded here that there was no support for those assertions of fact, and therefore the summary judgment was appropriate.
Right. But the reason because this is all about the expert opinion, the reason she decided the expert opinion was not enough to create a dispute was because she understood the expert opinion to say, you can't do this without hard data. The way you Progressive are doing it is wrong. And then she says, but there's no supporting information in your expert opinion that indicates that you actually know how Progressive does it, and therefore your opinion is too conclusory, as Judge Aframe said, to create a dispute. A genuine dispute of material fact, right? Isn't that basically what she says?
And I think the district court is right about that. Again, if you look at page 6 of the expert report, the expert himself says, this is based on my understanding of the PSA methodology, and that's how he's giving this opinion. And he does identify these other examples where it is permissible to deviate from list price. And so the district court was, I think, correct to say that there's just no material dispute of fact on whether the PSA is a flawed adjustment. Briefly, before I sit down, I do want to note that in addition to the PSA issue, which is how plaintiffs have sort of factually crafted their case, there are also just the elements of the underlying claims, one of which is to show injury. And so you need to show not only that the PSA is a flawed adjustment, but it actually led to a payment that fell below what each plaintiff was entitled to. We think that there are also concerns there, you know, one, because the valuation process that the expert did sort of inherently flowed through the PSA being a flawed adjustment, but also because the expert just never says that this amount actually fell below actual cash value. You know, he notes that there's a bunch of different ways that you can value vehicles. They're going to get different opinions. So we think that's an independent basis, too, that the court could affirm. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the court affirm below.
Thank you, counsel. 2 minutes rebuttal.
Please reintroduce yourself on the record to begin.
John Steed for the appellants. Plaintiff's expert in his report on page 4 of the report starts with his list of issues with the PSA, and he says, first, the internet price is the only data point concerning that a particular vehicle listed with a particular seller would sell. So he's saying his first point is about the just what objective data is available. Second, his talk goes in about appraisal standards and the comp methodology do not permit deducting the advertised price of it. So he's saying there's an industry standard valuation tool that doesn't allow this, and he's saying that objective data has to be the thing you use. And then third, he says he also takes issue with the inner workings of the PSA, but his first two points are that the PSA isn't something that should be used. And as far as the damages, he opines on the value of these vehicles. He said, looking at this data that's available in these reports, my determination is that the value is X, and Progressive played them X minus PSA. And so they were underpaid. And so I think, and those are unrebutted. I mean, the court just focused in the decision below on, well, you didn't show us how the PSA worked, and other plaintiffs in similar cases have taken issue with how the PSA worked. But this expert leading point is that even if it works right, it's not something you should use to value a car. And here's the correct, and based on this information, this is how I would value this car. So we have an expert saying this car's more worth than Progressive paid or offered. And so I think, and that is something, and that's, those are material facts that are in the record. It's not, and so regardless, we have an expert who said the cars are worth more than Progressive paid. And so I think, and they did it through this device that has no justification. And if the record doesn't have much about the PSA, it does say Progressive says what it is. It says it's based on assumptions about, it says it's based on consumer behavior, specifically that they will negotiate a lower price. And so if that's all we know about the PSA, the expert says that's not something we use in this industry to determine the value of cars. And they'll have experts that say otherwise, but that's a question for a jury.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.
Call the last case.